This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Fake threats, real consequences. That's the name of a new campaign launched by the Lee County School District in collaboration with local law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida to combat the issue of students making threats of violence against classmates or against their respective schools in general. These types of threats made by students are nothing new, per se, but they have been on the rise at school districts across the country since the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland 1 year ago that took the lives of 17 people. In the week following the shooting in Parkland, representatives of the Ohio-based national organization, Educators School Safety Network, say they were logging about 50 threats a day on average. Prior to the Parkland massacre, that number was about 10 threats a day on average. And a report from that same organization released last fall recorded more than 3,600 threats and incidents of violence occurring in K-12 schools across the nation in the 2017-2018 school year. That represents a 62% increase from the previous school year. And schools in Lee County have been no exception to that trend. Since the Parkland shooting, school district officials and law enforcement agencies in Lee County have handled more than 200 such threat incidents. And in recent weeks, such threats have been prominent in local headlines, as more than 20 threats have been made against schools in Lee County just since this past winter break. The Fake Threats, Real Consequences campaign is aimed at helping students understand that officials will not take such threats of violence as pranks, and that students found to be responsible can be arrested and face second-degree felony charges. That's already been the case for several students so far this year. In addition, this new campaign has been launched with the start of, within a few weeks of the start of Florida's annual legislative session, and lawmakers have already begun tackling a number of proposals aimed at addressing issues of school safety, as well as preventative measures that can be taken in the form of mental health counseling and other interventions. Joining me now in studio for a closer look is Rick Parfit. He was hired on as the Lee County School District's Director of Safety and Security last spring in the wake of the Parkland shooting. He has nearly four decades of experience with municipal and campus law enforcement agencies, most recently serving as police chief and director of public safety at Florida Southwestern State College in Fort Myers, and prior to that at the University of Pittsburgh. He has specializations and certifications in threat assessment and behavioral intervention. And when he started his law enforcement career at the tender age of 19, he was one of the youngest police officers in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Rick, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, John.
We're also joined by the principal of Fort Myers High School, Dr. Robert Butts. Butts took over as principal at Fort Myers High last year, previously serving as principal at Mariner High School in Cape Coral, and he's held positions with the Lee County School District for about the past 20 years now. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we're also speaking with Lee County Sheriff's Office Deputy and Commander in the Department's Youth Services Division with Lee County Schools, Michael Miller, who is basically charged with safeguarding one of the largest public school districts in the country. Commander Miller, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Pleasure to be here, John. Thank you.
And as always, we invite listeners to join the conversation. The phone number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And to start off, Rick Parfit, I wanted to ask you if you could tell us about what the school district has been experiencing in the way of threats since the Parkland shooting. It seems like there was kind of a sharp increase immediately following the shooting, then another spike in the run-up to the one-year anniversary. Is that correct?
Yes. And unfortunately, that seems to follow the pattern that we see in these types of incidents where there have been tragedies that, whether it be a copycat or a contagion effect, that we see these types of threats increase closer to the time of the anniversary.
Gotcha. And just before we had started the show, Commander Miller, we had been talking about the fact that I had seen your name in older news reports going back several years before the Parkland shooting. So this seems to be something kind of a common trend anytime there is a large-scale mass shooting event like this that gets national and international headlines.
And there is – unfortunately, we do investigate these school threats year-round, but we do have spikes when there is – unfortunately, when there's a tragedy or there's a school shooting that's publicized on the radio or on the news. Kids seem to see that, and for some reason they react, and they usually react negatively, and that's when we get involved. –
Has this been the case for a long time as far as these trends? And I just ask because I myself was a junior at a Cypress Lake High School here in Lee County when the Columbine shooting occurred in 98. And I distinctly remember just spending that whole afternoon glued to the 24-hour cable news stations when I got home from school. But I don't remember, and I could just be wrong here, but I don't remember there being any kind of rise in threats or people, you know, not attending school in the days following that shooting.
And I could answer at least on our end. And I know we've had threats. I've been in this unit for a little over 8 years, close to 9 years. We investigate them year round. The Parkland shooting or the Parkland tragedy was unfortunately very close to home.
Yeah.
And I think it affected us here locally. Not that it didn't, the other tragedies didn't affect us nationally, but Parkland was a little closer to home. Since the Parkland, Valentine's Day of last year, to present day, we've actually investigated 206 threats of violence, school violence. So, yeah, that's a lot of threats over a one-year period. Compared to that, historically, we've never seen anything nearly that close in numbers.
Yeah. And Commander Miller, I don't necessarily want to go through the details of, you know, each recent threat and start naming students' names on the air. I don't think there's a whole lot of purpose in that. But generally speaking, can you tell me about the nature of some of these most recent threats? Are they primarily in the high schools, or are we also seeing them being made by younger students as well?
Amazingly, we're seeing them from elementary, middle, up to high school. We've investigated at least, I'd say, in the last 2 months. A lot of them were in the elementary sector, believe it or not. The kids are writing them on bathroom walls. And as they get a little older, when they get in the middle and the high school, then they're using social media a little bit more than the youngers. But, we've investigated everything from social media, text threats, to writings on school bathroom walls. And it's alarming, to say the least.
And Rick Parfit, is there kind of an effort within the district itself to monitor social media where you know students are talking to see if these threats come about? Or how are threats typically discovered, I suppose I should be asking?
And most of them are actually discovered by or reported by other students. We see a lot of those kind of cases coming to the schools, to the principals. We have some ability to monitor that. Most of that comes through law enforcement, though. The new state statute passed last year after Parkland provides some legislation in that regard, but we haven't seen that yet, how that's going to work as far as monitoring social media.
And what prompted the district and law enforcement agencies, you know, like the Lee County Sheriff's Office, Fort Myers Police, also Cape Coral Police Departments, to join forces in this new campaign? I mean, it's just based on this idea that students, you know, perhaps like maybe we all once were, like naive, maybe more prone to making poor decisions and just really not thinking through the ramifications of what they're doing.
Well, I think that Commander Miller mentioned that the impact that it's had not only on the school district, on law enforcement, it's using up valuable resources. It's cutting into actually education time. So students are missing out, even the ones that are there still missing out on quality education time as well.
So what's the main message to students here? You know, what happens when a student is found to be responsible for making one of these threats? Commander Miller, is this an automatic arrest situation?
Well, every situation, we have an investigation that correlates with that threat. A lot of them don't rise to the level of breaking state statute, which unfortunately, not every kid goes to jail, but we do work very closely with the school district, and there's school sanctions that are imposed, and I believe Principal Butts can probably expand a little bit more on that. But at the stance of law enforcement in the state attorney's office, there's zero tolerance at this point. We've always had that stance of zero tolerance. However, with the amount, with the abundance of these threats that we're receiving and the resources that were tapped, and of course, with disturbing the educational environment of our students and our teachers, it's definitely it's a huge concern. So education is key, and that's what we're trying to do on the law enforcement back end of it.
And of course, the students, of course, are aware of what's going on as well. They might not be reading the newspaper quite as closely as their parents are. So, you know, maybe for students who might be hearing this, or the rebroadcast later on today, you know, some of the students who have made some of the threats earlier this year have been arrested, they're taken to a juvenile detention facility, facing second-degree felony charges. I mean, can you tell us maybe what some of the long-term consequences of a felony conviction for a kid that young might be, like how this could affect their lives down the road?
And that's the question that's sad. Kids don't think about ramifications. They don't think about their future. They think about what's in front of them that day. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, their actions could dictate what happens to them in the future. And what I mean by that is maybe getting that career job, that job that they've always wanted. Maybe they wanted to get in law enforcement. Maybe they want to get into, you know, the government. Maybe they wanted to get in something that a felony arrest will prevent them from getting in. It's unfortunate that they think about it maybe too late. But, you know, due to their actions, they could be long-term, you know, ramifications based on, you know, these threats.
All right. And if you're just joining our show today, we're exploring the Lee County School District's recently launched Fake Threats, Real Consequences campaign in response to threat against schools being made by students. Listeners can join the conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open again at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. Or reach us on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And I understand one of the multiple press conferences that were held last week included State Attorney Amira Fox. Is the State Attorney's Office one of the active collaborators of this campaign?
Absolutely. They're a major stakeholder not only in the community but our kids' futures. But they do want to be stern. They want to be straight up in front that every threat's going to be investigated. If it's deemed that it's credible or non-credible, regardless, if those students are arrested or the kids arrested, they're going to be prosecuted to the fullest extent. Make no minds about it. The sheriff's office is under that same govern that you make those threats, we'll investigate it. If you meet the criteria, you will be going to jail, and the state attorney's office will prosecute you.
All right. And Principal Butts, aside from this, you know, official law enforcement response, what other consequences could such students face, you know, regarding the schools? Is this like an automatic expulsion situation?
Well, the school district code of conduct is very clear as far as a disruption on campus, which is what it would fall under, mm-hmm. which law enforcement has to be contacted, as well as students who miss valuable education or academic time. So that's what it falls under. And it's a level 3 offense, according to code of conduct. And a level 3 offense, really, you don't have a lot of options as you look at a level 3 offense. The first one is expulsion. And if it's that egregious to the point of where, yes, the majority of students are out, or it's found credible that this could – that the student was actually planning on that, I could see us going down that route of expulsion. From my knowledge right now, I don't believe that any of the results have so far in the school district of Lee County have been expulsion. The second one is to send them to what's called Success Academy, used to be known as ALC or the Alternative Learning Center, mm-hmm. for a period of days. Usually it's 180 days, so it's an entire school year
in which
they're getting their education at the Alternative Learning Center or Success Academy, down all the way down to a suspension or, you know, minor. I mean, there are several different, you know, it's a ladder of discipline that you're going down. So it's expulsion, it's Success Academy, it's out of school suspension. But either way, you know, we have to take it seriously. And each time it comes up, we have to take it seriously as well.
Right, right. This campaign also includes a warning to parents that they could be held financially liable for costs associated with the law enforcement, you know, having to investigate the threat. Commander Miller and, you know, our representatives from the district here, maybe you all can weigh in on what some of those costs might be. What goes into these investigations? And I'll start with you, Commander Miller.
I couldn't give you an actual dollar figure, but I could tell you that the resources that we tap in when we do a basic investigation reference your school threats. We've got unlimited man hours with our detective team. We're also using our resources at our disposal from the sheriff's office. We might use our major crimes, added road patrols because, we're going to be honest, when these threats come through, we put more uniforms in the school. When we have that and we don't have that ability, we don't have those SROs designated as a pool of SROs. So basically we have to tap in the road patrol. So we're tapping in road patrol using that resource to have more uniforms on school property. And it's costing a lot of money to fill those. There's a lot of overtime. So that it's ironic, the amount of resources that we have to use on something very simple. But rest assured, we leave no stone unturned. Our investigations are very thorough. They're very complete. So they take a lot of time. time equals money.
And Dr. Butts, Rick Parfit, can you weigh in on perhaps what some of those costs might be as they are associated with the school or the school district?
Well, I can't speak for district-wide, but as far as the school is concerned, it's the resources, it's time. Uh-huh. We don't get into education to, you know, have to deal with this type of thing. We're trying to educate students. So you're taking the time of administrators, of our school resource officer, you're taking all of them away from educating our students to put a focus on what inevitably ends up being a fake threat. So the amount of time that we're being removed from being able to be our academic instruction leaders in the classroom, to be able to help our teachers, to mentor students. So we're being taken away from our main job and our main function. So as far as resources, I can't put a dollar amount on it, but you know, can you put a dollar amount on the education that our students are receiving? And if we're removing the opportunity to be able to educate our students, then that's, you can't put a dollar amount on that, like I said. So that's a huge part of what we do is we're losing the opportunity to be able to educate our students. And then, you know, the threat that we had 824 students who missed school the very next day. Right. Parents are protecting their students and so on. We understand that. But here's 824 students who missed valuable instructional time. So you can't put a dollar amount on that.
Right. Anything else from the district's position where a parent might end up with a bill?
Well, there's nothing current in that regard, and I think Dr. Butts explained that rather well because yeah. It's hard to put a dollar amount because the cost that we're associated with is really lost instructional time. We do occasionally staff some additional people, but most of the staffing from a law enforcement perspective comes from the law enforcement agencies that we have agreements with for SROs.
Commander Miller, as far as you know, has the Lee County Sheriff's Office or any of the other, you know, local law enforcement agencies in our area actually pursued this option?
Not to my knowledge. However, I know it has been talked about within the inner circles with the municipalities. So I know it has been discussed. But has that plan been implemented? I don't know yet.
All right. Well, let's talk about the process of what's supposed to occur when one of these threats does come to light. I imagine, of course, the first step is going to be to alert the school resource officer on duty at that school.
Absolutely. When we get that information, it can come through filter through all different ways. It can come through fellow students. It could come from school administration. But when we do get it, we react and we consult with our team at the school district, which is that particular school. We with the principal. We tell them what we're doing. Once we have that information, we run the investigation, and we do it exclusively under a law enforcement blanket. And that's not to show that we're the big king in the house, because we're not, but we are the professionals when it comes to dealing with these particular threats. If we have people running multiple investigations, it can actually probably jeopardize future prosecution or probably, you know, an inevitable arrest that might articulate reference to our investigation. So, yeah, we run the gamut on it for sure.
Can you maybe tell us a bit about how one goes about determining whether or not a threat is credible?
Well, I can tell you with our detective team, when they respond, the first thing they do, that's what we try to deem right off the bat. So, and when you see a threat written by a fifth or sixth grader or seventh grader, and there's misspelled words, yeah. There's already something going through your mind saying this probably is not a credible threat. However, in law enforcement eyes, everything's credible until we deem it not. And the way we do that is we get if we can determine who the student is. If we can't, we start going through investigation purposes or means as looking through cameras, looking at video surveillance, trying to develop any kind of suspect information. If all that fails, we rely on Crime Stoppers. Crime Stoppers has been amazing for us. They put that information out, and I'm telling you, kids, when they do something like this, they don't keep it to themselves. Mm. They tell other students. So if other students say, hey, I can make X amount of dollars by remaining anonymous and report this kid, they're going to do it, and that's how we get a lot of our tips and our leads. Then we run that investigation with those leads. We either get a confession or we either have physical evidence that supports our investigation. We can make an arrest.
Principal Butts, I wanted to ask you about that issue as well, because as Commander Miller just noted, a lot of times it might be a student themselves who first sees the threat and reports it to a teacher or an official with the school. Is there kind of like a no snitch sort of culture that you have to combat, like kids don't want to tell on each other, Or do you think enough kids are, you know, kind of tired of seeing stories of school shootings in the headlines and are more willing to come forward, even if it's somebody they know who made the threat, just because maybe they're just tired of this?
Well, in my years of as in administration, we've had to overcome the no snitch thing. But Stoneman Douglas has really helped us with that. If you can look at a bright side of such a tragic event, is the students now see the importance of bringing forth information. So they will bring forth information. However, that's our job and our duty. When a student brings us information, we want to make sure that that's confidential, that we do not share with anybody else who brought us that information, because we're protecting all of the students, including the one that's bringing that information to us. So Stoneman Douglas has helped us to overcome that, and now we do. We see a lot more students that are now coming forward because they want to make sure that, you know, when they come to school, they're safe, and they want to make sure that their classmates are safe as well.
All right. And Commander Miller, whenever you do positively identify a suspect, imagine with kids it's maybe a bit easier to get a confession. Do they usually acknowledge that they were the ones?
No, not really.
No?
They really don't. No.
Okay.
Kids are private for the most matter, but we find out with a lot of our investigations reference these school threats. Kids either do it for a couple reasons. One, they think it's funny, and I'm not sure why they think it's funny. They're bored. Or they're trying to impress somebody. And a lot of our social media threats have just been a fellow student, male student, trying to impress a female student by saying something along those lines of bringing a gun to school. Whether they think it's funny or fascinating, I don't know. But I know when we've had a lot of our investigations that led with confessions, a lot of the kids have said that. They've said, well, I thought it was funny. It was just a joke. Well, it's not really a joke. And they learn it when they're placed in handcuffs and they're taken to jail.
I would have thought there'd be more utility behind the motivation, like trying to get out of a test or something.
And that's happened in the past. I mean, we've had threats that impacted the school where, yeah, that was probably one of the underlining reasons why they did it. But, you know, the last couple weeks that we've done with our investigations is basically just because they thought it was funny. They thought it was a joke.
Well, Commander Miller, we've got an interesting question here from Maximilian, an FGCU student here in Estero, and he's just called to comment that he feels the glorification of school shooters, you know, through the deep dives into their history and background or even their methodology, that, you know, in the media, it inspires future mass shooters. So he wants us to ask, you know, you, Commander Miller, if, you know, you're talking to members of the press like myself about how to handle these incidents better so as not to sensationalize and add to the problem, I guess what would be your message to folks like me who are on the news each morning?
That's a good question. With us in law enforcement, I mean, if I had my way, people that got arrested for these type of threats, they're incarcerated. I wouldn't mind having their name all over the news, having their picture all over the news. However, we're dealing with children.
Right.
And we're very sensitive when we're dealing with the kids. So we do not, when we put a child in handcuffs, we don't parade them through the school. We like to do it very privately. It's a tough question. I think a lot of it has to do with the news media, which we can't control. They have a right to report, and they do report. They do just that. So basically, if I could give them any guidance, is like Max was saying, they sensationalize some of these shooters. Keep their names out of the newspaper. Keep their faces off the news, because sometimes that's what they gravitate for. They want to be somebody famous. And unfortunately, you know, we're dealing with some of these kids that have that same mentality.
Oh, it's interesting that you put it that way, because I've noticed in our own reporting of the news, I try to keep these kids' names out of it. And it's not a situation where ethically journalists would necessarily do that in the case of, say, you know, a victim of a crime who's a minor. We never report those. But the information isn't redacted from police reports, so the media can do that. But I think that's an interesting point that you make, and it'd be interesting to see more media organizations follow that guideline. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation exploring school safety and security and the Lee County School District's new Fake Threats, Real Consequences campaign with our guests. I'm John Davis, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. If you're just joining us, we've been discussing the new Fake Threats, Real Consequences campaign launched by the Lee County School District in collaboration with local law enforcement agencies, as well as the efforts made and challenges to keeping schools safe and addressing a growing number of fake threats being made by students. We're continuing our conversation now with Fort Myers High School Principal Dr. Robert Butts, Lee County School District Director of Safety and Security Rick Parfit, and Lee County Sheriff's Office Deputy and Commander in the Department's Youth Services Division, Michael Miller. As a reminder, if you'd like to add your voice to our discussion, give us a call now. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. You know, we've talked a bit about how the department determines whether or not a threat is credible or non-credible. But Principal Butts, I want to discuss that concept from your end, because of course, as the principal, you know, communication and transparency with students and their families is key. But at the same time, as we've sort of touched on, when recent threats have been made in the past, you see the next school day. I think there was that one earlier in North Fort Myers where nearly 2/3 of the student population didn't show up the following Monday. So it's kind of like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You don't want to disrupt learning any more than you need to, but you can't not tell people what's going on.
Correct. And, you know, you don't want to cause paranoia, but you still have to provide information. So there is a degree of transparency. We want to make sure that all of our students and all of our staff and all of our parents, they're all aware of what's transpired. Mm-hmm. And we want them to know, you know, this is what's going on, but we also want them to know this is what we're doing. So, you know, law enforcement's been contacted, you know, there's an investigation, and then we make sure that we're keeping them up to date on everything that's going on moving forward. So, yes, it's going to cause paranoia whether we like it or not, but – and that's another part of what we discussed earlier, the amount of time that is taken the students out of the classroom.
Right.
But – and we have to take that into consideration, but safety is first. So although we want to make sure that we're educating our students and they're coming to school every day and they're getting the best education possible, we also want to make sure that they're safe. Students aren't going to learn if they're not safe. So we want to make sure that they feel safe, that it's been taken care of, and so we have to be transparent in communicating with the parents.
All right. And we've got a call now from Robert in Port Charlotte. Robert, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. To your guest and certainly the topic generally is really been interesting. The thing that I'm concerned about, at least think about, is when we have identified or adjudicated these students that are, you could call it acting out, are we any other community resources, and I would imagine there is, that come into the families to look at perhaps counseling and some of the analysis of some of the family concerns, that this might be an opportune time to kind of get to some of these kids. And I just go back to my own experience acting out in the 60s up in New York, and my parents got pulled into police athletic league, and they wanted to keep us active and involved. My parents were a little not connected, and it really did help to be involved in father and son activities. Now, that's a simple idea, 60 years old, but today we have mental health and counseling and perhaps family evaluation. Is that something that's on the table or at least considered once the threat is identified as being a student? That's all I have.
Great question, Robert, and I'll ask you to listen to the response on the radio. I don't know who wants to take this one, but that's definitely not something I had considered.
Well, John, the school district does have those types of programs in place, and they've actually increased post-Parkland, and the mental health – each school has a mental health team as well as a threat assessment team. And those teams work collaboratively. Not every threat rises to the level, like Commander Miller mentioned, to a criminal act, but we set that threshold low. And when the schools determine that, and when the schools have counselors, social workers, psychologists determine that there may be some underlying mental health issue, yes, they definitely are referred for that.
All right. And we've got another question from Matt. He's from Indiana, and he recently retired from law enforcement down here in Cape Coral. And he's wondering if there is any employment opportunity for retired law enforcement officers to help out with this, you know, rise of school threats in our area.
Good question, Matt. And I know we've taken the initiative, and we've done an undertaking, to say the least, when we've put a school resource officer in every public school, including now, for the first time ever, three parochial schools here in Lee County. So we did a lot of hiring. We did a lot of folks that had prior law enforcement that wanted to get back in the game. They went through the hiring process and they came aboard. I think we have four or five people that actually were retired for a number of years, came back out and wanted to get back and be a certified law enforcement officer. And we put them in the youth service team. We implemented them as SROs. So it worked really well. So that's one way you could, if that's something that you're geared towards, we could definitely use you.
All right. Well, while we're on that topic, let's kind of stick around there in terms of changes that have been made in response, because, you know, we had the state legislature pass the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act last year in the wake of the shooting. So as you just increased, you know, there's school resource officers now in every school. Previously in elementary schools, they would sort of rotate. So that's just one of the changes that's been implemented there. And I just kind of wanted to ask all of you, I mean, that comes at a significant cost. I think for Lee County alone, you're looking at close to just $9 million. Yeah. How is that extra financial burden, I guess, taken on? Who's bearing that burden?
Well, we've been fortunate enough to partner with the school district, and we have been partners with the school district for a number of years.
Yeah.
And this is the first time, like I said, for the last 7 to 8 years that we've repartnered with our local municipality, Sanibel, which we've had for a while, Cape Coral and Fort Myers. So we've actually, over the summer of last summer, we had to implement school resource officers, as you said, in all our schools, which are elementary, middle, and high school. And then let's not forget our charters. Charter schools are kind of a forgotten type school out there.
Yeah.
But we actually have law enforcement officers in all the schools, all the cities in their charters. So and again, like I said, three parochial schools. So we've definitely beefed up our staff. In addition, we've also put a second SRO in our high schools. So some of our high schools have, or most of our high schools now, unincorporated Lee County, have two deputies in those schools. If you think about it, they're anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 kids. So that's a small city.
Yeah. Well, and Rick Parfitt, I was hoping maybe you could touch also on some of the changes that have been implemented in schools since you came on board last summer or last spring, because there's been some pretty significant changes in regards to keeping schools safe. And I know you face this challenge of trying to make the schools safe, and you too, Principal Butts, but also you don't want them to seem like a lockdown fortress either.
Exactly. And I think that we look at it as a layered approach to what we do. We obviously need the law enforcement. We appreciate that response. But we're looking at the target hardening of schools. But unfortunately, we have schools that are probably close to 100 years old to some that were built last August. So retrofitting schools to those safety standards today is somewhat difficult. But we've increased different technologies related to closed circuit TV, access control, a single point of entry. Most of our schools have 100% closure fencing surrounding them. So it's a layered approach that we look at. And then along with the added aspects of the mental health and the threat assessment teams that were added because of this legislation, I think it just makes it a more comprehensive approach to safety.
I know a lot of schools got new security camera systems as well that really kind of point at those single point entry areas so that employees can actually see who's standing at the door before they decide whether or not to open it and let a visitor in. Can some of the money that pays for those systems come from, say, that half-cent sales tax increase that Lee County voters recently approved? Or was that money specifically going to be for technology as it relates to classroom instruction?
No, some of that will in fact be related to the safety aspects like that. All of our schools have had some sort of closed circuit TV. We're increasing that, of course, as we move on, adding that technology or more of that technology to schools. And like you mentioned, the front door video entrances allow the schools to remain locked during the day and visitors to respond to a front door where they have to be granted entry by a front office staff after they identify who they are or show identification, and it provides that also that layer of security, yes.
Yeah, and then it seems like there's simpler things like just making sure classroom doors have locks on them that can be locked from the inside.
Exactly. And that's one of the directives that the districts had actually even before Parkland, that that when classes are in session, the door should be closed and locked.
What about one of the concepts I've been hearing about since the Parkland shooting is hard corners? And that is, you know, a lot of the doors have windows. So just making sure that in the event, you know, God forbid, of a mass shooting incident, students could hide in a classroom and not be visible to someone looking through that window into the room.
It's an area that our SROs are working with each of the schools and the classrooms to train in a lockdown drill. We don't physically mark a floor indicating that, and actually in some cases, especially when you're dealing with real small children, the training more for school officials so they understand in a type of an emergency that they need to evacuate the kids out of range of windows in the doors, and that's where the hard corners concept comes from.
Gotcha. And what about drills in schools for students for events like this? Dr. Butts, is that something that has been ongoing? Is that something that maybe increased after Parkland, or how does that work?
I don't believe that it's increased from Parkland, but I believe that students and staff both now take it more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That they're, you know, instead of teachers continuing to teach, they see the importance of it, and they see the importance of getting those students to the hard corners, you know, getting everybody away from the windows and taking that time seriously. So yes, as a school, again, I don't believe, and I believe Rick can talk a little bit about that, I don't believe the number of the drills has increased, but and maybe it has, but the seriousness that each school, each student, each staff member they're taking it absolutely more seriously. And as Commander Miller said earlier, a lot of that has to do with because Stoneman Douglas was so close to home here.
Right.
So yeah, they do take it more serious.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. Well, let's go ahead and take a call now from Doug in Naples. Doug, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. I missed the beginning of the show, so it's possible you've addressed this. But I'm very curious as to why juvenile offenders that are making all these threats and that 16-year-old girl that was found with drugs in her past are on TV every single night with pictures and names repeatedly, and yet violent offenders that are out there that have committed violent crimes, they'll say 18-year-old so-and-so and a 16- or a 15-year-old accomplice, but they never give a name or a picture. Why do we protect those offenders and not these offenders? I understand that FGCU has a uniform policy and does not give names of juveniles, but clearly our TV station actually daily, repeatedly the same person, and I don't understand what the difference is.
Oh, interesting. Well, we don't actually have any media representatives on our panel today, but we did address this issue a little bit earlier, and one of the things that was brought up was the concept of sensationalizing them and maybe getting on TV might be part of a motivation for doing it. So, you know, one thing that I think, and Commander Miller, don't let me take your words out of context here, but maybe it would be better if more news organizations didn't actually publicize these kids' names, because in a way that might be giving them partially what they're looking for.
No, you explained it very well.
Okay.
I do think it's that sensationalized aspect. I think whether it's the kids or whoever it is, but the media has a right to report. And for unknown reasons, they gravitate towards the schools and they gravitate towards the students that do something that is unpopular, whether they get arrested or whatever the situation may be. But they gravitate towards that, and that's what they report on.
All right. Doug, thanks so much for the call and for the thoughtful question. Principal Butts, I know that every change that's been implemented hasn't necessarily related to technology or equipment. Some of them are just changing habits. For instance, I was reading a news press article from last year quoting Superintendent Atkins, and he was talking about well, I'm just going to read the quote. He says, "The old days where the principal goes to one singular spot and that's where they are every single class exchange, every single period, has to be over. They should never know where you are going to pop up." I'm wondering if that, if you've changed maybe your habits a bit, if you're maybe where you are throughout the school day isn't as predictable as perhaps it once was.
No, and there's a rotation. We actually, Michelle Stanford's our assistant principal that oversees safety and security for the school. She does a great job of making sure that there is a rotation. We rotate where our SRO is. We rotate where the rest of the administrators are in between classes, during classes. We also have security officers, well, security officers, but they're security on the school, and they rotate as well, and they're constantly moving. So yes, it's more vigilant and it's more visible. We want to make sure that we're visible, and that's to stop little things that go on as well. You know, students going into the bathroom doing things that they're not supposed to be doing. The more visibility that we have as adults from teachers and staff members, the more likely it is to deter something from happening.
Absolutely. And one of the legislative actions that came out of last year's legislative session was the Guardian program, which allows trained school staff who are not primarily classroom teachers to carry firearms. Now, only 13 of the state's 67 county public school districts went ahead and embraced this program, and that did not include Lee County. But then just last week, on a party line vote, we saw members of Florida's Senate Education Committee advancing a bill to expand the Guardian program in a way that would allow classroom teachers to bring guns to school. Now, I don't know if any of you are authorized to speak on behalf of, the district or the sheriff's office in regards to that program, but I would be really curious to hear any of your thoughts about whether something like that could be an effective tool or whether you think it just increases the risk of danger for students having more guns in the schools.
Well, I can tell you just based on last week's press conference with Sheriff Marcino and Superintendent and State Attorney's Office along with County Commissioner, that was discussed. And Superintendent and the Sheriff both said they don't want to see civilians or teachers with guns for the obvious reasons. They want to keep the guns in the professionals' hands. One, we're in uniform. You know who we are.
Right.
There's no second guessing that we are armed. Unfortunately, if we have teachers that are armed and have guns in an emergency situation and first responders might be there at the school, they might not be able to identify who's friend or who's foe.
Gotcha.
So it's a big concern.
Well, and I know that among the 13 school districts that did adopt this program more readily, they tended to be in more rural, more sparsely populated districts. And I don't mean to push back against you, but do you think that a program like that might have more efficacy if you were in a smaller school district? I mean, as I mentioned, Lee County's is one of the largest in the country.
Well, just thinking, like you said, some of the smaller municipalities, smaller counties, smaller school districts, they might opt for that, whether it's financial reasons or whatever the reason might be. It was working for them. It's not something that's school district and sheriff's office is going to entertain.
All right. Rick Parfit, do you imagine going forward? I mean, this would ultimately be a decision of members of the school board, but do you think even with this expanded program that this is still something Lee County officials might find unpalatable?
I think so. Commander Miller mentioned, we're extremely happy with the way it's working now, and we weighed the pros and cons and looked at the benefits of what those two programs offer, and the trained law enforcement, trained SROs, officers that are and deputies trained in critical incident training offer much more to our students and our staff than armed security.
And Rick, I know that a lot of what you preach, just aside from, the physical measures to harden schools and security is behavioral intervention, identifying risks before they lead to violence. And in that regard, we saw Governor DeSantis recently issue an executive order calling on the Florida Department of Education to investigate school-based discipline diversion programs. Like in Broward County, they had one called the Promise Program, which has come under a lot of scrutiny because the admitted shooter in the Parkland shooting had gone through that or at least was part of that. Does Lee County have something similar?
To the Promise? No.
Well, not to Promise specifically, but to this concept of, I guess, behavioral intervention for students that, maybe have committed some sort of misdemeanor or have given us some indication that they might need some extra help in some respect.
Well, by statute, we moved forward, obviously, with the threat assessment teams at every school. And so we've established, identified, and to date we've trained nearly all of them, all of the teams in the schools, and they're usually a principal or an assistant, the mental health folks and the school resource officer. And part of the threat assessment team is that they of course do look for alternatives to maybe traditional cases where they're going to be hardline discipline. So there are only certain kinds of situations where the school district would act in a zero tolerance kind of posture that they're going to take that hardline approach. But I think with the threat assessment teams and the whole concept behind it is that we identify concerning behavior, problem behavior early on because it's a preventative method. That's what threat assessment's based on. It's preventing violence, not predicting it, but preventing it based on the student's behavior, concerning behavior, looking at all types of aspects. And the team approach, this multidisciplinary team approach with all those key players in the school adds such a value to determining whether this individual is what we refer to as on a pathway to violence.
Yeah. And Principal Butts, have you undergone any kind of specific training when it comes to what we just heard Rick Parfit talking about? And I'm wondering if having gone through something like that maybe changes how you interpret some of what you see going through your school day to day.
Well, the threat assessment team itself, yes, we've gone through training as far as the threat assessment and that team itself, which is, you know, identifying whether or not there's going to be an issue. And we talked earlier about the amount of time that goes into it. This is a 26-page document to ensure that we don't have any loopholes and we don't have any gaps to make sure that we're keeping the students safe. So here we go again, using all of our resources on a 26-page document to ensure what's going on. So when we go back to the fake threat, real consequences, you know, we're spending a lot of time now removing our administrators and our counselors to put a focus on students that may have, you know, brought forth these fake threats. So yes, when you say, have we changed some things? Absolutely. You know, because now we're taking it more seriously, and we're spending a lot more time on it. Where we don't look at it and just dismiss it. We go through this, and you know, this is a process the school district has now developed that helps us to bring everything that we have, all of our resources together, and make sure that we're doing it the right way.
Right. And Rick, I wanted to ask, because you know, I was just thinking when I was reading about your background and during some of the comments today of some of the discussions I've had with, you know, state lawmakers like Senator Kathleen Pasadomo from our state legislative delegation here in Southwest Florida. And I remember speaking with her less than 24 hours after the Parkland shooting and her telling me that actually at the very moment the shooting was occurring, she was, you know, employing her colleagues in a Senate committee to support a measure as it would relate to increasing, you know, mental health access and sort of adding in some of those preventative measures to sort of identify a student who's at risk before a violent incident occurs. I'm just curious if you've ever had an opportunity to sit down with a state lawmaker like Senator Pasadomo and impart some of your background, because you have, you know, extensive decades of experience in this specific area.
I have and have expressed that more so now after Parkland than prior to Parkland, but even before Parkland, yes. And that's one of the areas that groups that I belong to impress upon, because they want to push that that agenda, that law enforcement agenda. You mentioned Governor DeSantis' directive to the Department of Ed, but he also had a directive to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to come up with a threat assessment strategy for the state. And along with that, even some of the currently proposed legislation, which will add and add probably more than change the current threat assessment law that was just passed a year ago.
And a question for all of you, regardless of what bills get passed or which ones don't in the upcoming legislative session that's going to start in a few weeks, I imagine you're going to want to see more funding allocated towards these specific efforts. I saw a lot of what came out of the bill the legislature passed last spring, and it all seemed really great. But in a lot of ways, and then I watched local school districts and law enforcement agencies all across the state kind of struggle in figuring out how we're going to pay for all this. So would you like to see this? I mean, it seemed a little bit like an unfunded mandate. Great ideas, but not a lot of resources behind it. Is that something that you're hoping to see coming out of the legislative session.
Oh, absolutely. I think the some of the school districts have proposed even this past year to free up the funding from the unused money from the Guardian program to help offset costs related to SROs, because that's where we want to be dealing with SROs. And like you mentioned, we're dealing with about $9 million and the probably at least half of that comes from the school district's general funds.
Right. And Commander Miller, as you've already put it, it's not just the county school district schools. It's also the charters and the private schools throughout the county as well. So kind of a lot of money and a lot of resources to go around.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. Some of our charter schools don't have the financial resources, and they struggle. But the sheriff's office, the deputies, the SROs, we're here for all the schools as much as we can be. We try to extend the olive branch, extend our arms, the blanket of law enforcement over some of the smaller schools, some of the smaller private schools. We do a lot of teaching. We do a lot of education in those schools, even though we're not partnered with them officially through a contract. Mm-hmm. We do reach out, and we try to do our best with making sure all schools are safeguarded.
All right. Well, we are about out of time for today's program, but I want to thank my guests who've been with us for the hour. We've been speaking with Fort Myers High School Principal Dr. Robert Butts. Thanks so much. Go Green Wave.
Absolutely.
Also, thanks to Lee County Sheriff's Office Commander and the Department's Youth Services Division, Michael Miller. Great speaking with you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And also thanks to Lee County School District Director of Safety and Security, Rick Parfit. Great to have you with us as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And if you tuned in during our show today and would like to hear it in its entirety, you can tune in again tonight at 9 o'clock after On the Media to hear an encore broadcast, or you can always hear episodes in full on our website. That's gulfcoastlive.org. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, and PR for Southwest Florida.